Blog Talk Radio.
Well, that was lovely.
The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Hello, and welcome to UFO, Paranormal, and Mystical Insights. I'm Ruth Anna Marcefio, and your host is here, Steve Katz. Hello, Steve.
Yes. Hi. Welcome. Steve Katz here, and I hope that we're joined by some more people who are out there. We will have specific guests in the future, but since we're just initiating this now, we're more or less setting the groundwork until we get specific guests to come on. And tonight, one of the things that we'll talk about is the relationship or the crossover between UFOs and the mystical and paranormal. Ufology is one of those fields that is interdisciplinary. And I think if you get into it and if you've had an experience of your own, you'll readily understand it. But even if you study the experiences and the history of others, it involves all types of areas. It involves engineering. It involves religion. It involves psychology, medicine, cosmology, all different types of areas. And I would like to focus tonight on the interface between religion and ufology, or if you could also put it, spirituality and ufology. I'm not talking about necessarily organized religion, although organized religion, you know, does enter into it as well.
Sure.
And so, you know, I think that will take the focus into a specific area. There's been a lot of work done in this area, and starting, I think, with the guy who wrote those books about ancient astronauts, and there's been a lot of Eric von Däniken, and there were other guys. I have a set of paperback books that I bought at a used bookstore in Pennsylvania many years ago, which I have not read through yet. But he has four or five studies. Each study is a different part of the world, and he goes back into the origins of the religions and their sacred scriptures and points out possible UFO interactions. And, you know, be it the West, be it India, the Middle East, and so on and so forth.
South America. Mm-hmm.
South America. And Jacques Vallée, the French computer scientist who got involved in this, and who was, I think he was a consultant on Close Encounters of the Third Kind, or Fourth Kind. That was a
Third
movie.
Kind, yeah, he
yeah,
was.
That was a movie put out in 1982. Well, he was one of the early ones who got involved in, reading about these mystical occurrences that people have had involving aerial appearances or evolving appearances of entities or objects from the atmosphere. And, you know, he pretty soon realized that, you know, there was a lot of close similarities, and he came to the conclusion that, you know, what we today may be putting in technological terms and thinking that some of these things are coming from physical places in other parts of our own universe and that are material and maybe coming from neighboring solar systems and so on. Actually, he came to the conclusion that they're probably not, and that they may be mystical or interdimensional spiritual presences that in prior years before the Industrial Revolution and the Enlightenment, in the Middle Ages and ancient times, these entities were ascribed to religious figures and or some type of spiritual intelligences that had intervened, but they weren't intervening in a physical craft. They were intervening in a metaphysical craft, and they were coming from other dimensions. And so this is something that, you know, is a new take, because when the UFOs were first observed, I say first observed, but in modern times, recently, right after World War II, there was a quite an expansion of sightings and so on. And everything, of course, was put into military and technological terms, because that was the era of the development of airplanes and, you know, and then later on space vehicles. And I'm not saying that we don't have visitations from very advanced material vehicles. I think all of these things from our own dimension or even from another dimension, but that has interdimensional travel. And so I think the spiritual is valid, and I also think that it easily kind of melds into more conventional explanations as well. And that's the conclusion that he came to after spending many, many years studying this. And now, Left at Eastgate, which, as I said in last week's show, Left at Eastgate was a the UK's version of what we would call our Roswell incident. It was a very famous incident that happened at a U.S.-British joint Air Force base, which was very high security, and I think which also had quite a bit of nuclear materials, probably nuclear weapons. And it's been shown that the UFOs are attracted to nuclear sites, and this has been documented. There have been more sightings near nuclear sites than any other, or almost any other type of location. And there was an officer there that night that the UFO, what happened is, this base was near Randlesham Forest. It's not a base anymore. I think it was, you know, this, we're going back to 1982 when the Cold War was at its height between the Soviet Union and the U.S., and there was quite a lot of NATO-style nuclear bases in Western Europe and also the U.K., and this was one of them. And there was this guy, Larry Warren, who was an officer in the British Air Force, and he was on duty the night that there were strange lights seen in Randlesham Forest, which, when I say that and think about it, it sounds like something out of Robin Hood. I think it was, you know, because it's like an ancient site that's very well known in the U.K. And and they went to investigate it.
I think. Weren't the lights green or something there?
Well, yeah, there were all kinds of lights. I don't remember the specifics. I read the book many years ago. The whole incident stood out in my mind as an incident very close to the Betty and Barney Hill incident in
Betty
New Hampshire.
Yeah.
That's something to discuss apart. But interestingly, this guy Larry Warren and the people who were with him said that the UFO landed, and it had very unusual paranormal characteristics. It looked like it, first of all, it looked like it was not really a solid piece of machinery. It looked more or less permeable. In other words, it looked more or less like it was coming from some other dimension. And There were some entities that exited the ship, and various strange occurrences happened, and then it left, and, you know, they did various studies of it, and Peter Robbins, who's a UFO investigator that I hope someday, as busy as he is, I can get him on here at some time, but he wrote a whole book on it, and, you know, they discovered many strange phenomena connected with the landing, and this very well could have been interdimensional. And strangely, I seem to remember that the higher-ups on the Air Force base, a few of them were not surprised and seemed to expect it or know more about it than they were telling anybody else. So that's another aspect that we don't know, whether this had been prearranged or whether this happened then. You know, there was some prior contact between these entities and, you know, the higher-ups in the UK. And, you know, you can go back also to the famous sighting, the Fatima sighting in Portugal, which occurred, I think it was just prior to World War One. It was about 100 years ago, and these peasant children, they said that there was a sighting of the Virgin Mary, and they came home and they told their parents about it. And, you know, they went to the local, in those days, the most knowledgeable person was usually the local priest in these rural areas. And, you know, he questioned them about it. And, you know, it seemed that, you know, they were very, you know, open, honest, you know, young children who, you know, lived out in a rural area, and they were not like, you know, streetwise kids like we have in the cities here today. They were very, you know, very naive in things, and, you know, they would tell you exactly what they thought they saw, and they weren't trying to make, you know, a game out of it or get attention or anything. And there was also some other strange phenomenon that predictions were made and recorded and sent to the Vatican. I forget what all the predictions were. I think one remains to be fulfilled. I think one said that Russia was going, and this was before the Russian Revolution, that Russia was going to be a major power in the 20th century. And there were a couple of different things that occurred. And there was an aerial, there was an atmospheric occurrence or phenomenon or whatever you want to call it, because when word got out, many hundreds of people from the area came because the this spiritual entity that the children described as the Virgin Mary, but clearly with some interdimensional spiritual being, and they were probably using the language that they knew or what they thought it looked like, because, you know, whatever education they had at that point was religious education, and they probably had no other frame of reference to describe whatever it was, which till this day we don't know. I say we, I say the broad people out. I'm not talking about the Vatican. They may be perfectly satisfied with that, and I think they are, but whatever it was, you know, came down. Then predicted that the sun would stand still. Hundreds of people came on the date. They said the sun would stand still. Something strange happened on that date. We know astrologically, or we know cosmologically, that if actually the sun did stand still, quote unquote, in other words, if there was some major disturbance in the movement of the sun, you know, all the planets would probably, you know, be destroyed one way or another. You know, it would upset the gravitational balances, and, you know, now that didn't happen. However, everybody that came there did claim that they did, that something did happen related to the sun. So I don't, as far as natural science is concerned, sun obviously didn't stand still, but something did happen. Now, you know, whether it was an eclipse, I don't think it was an eclipse, but there was some phenomena that happened. And so, you know, you can go down through history and, you know, you will come up with this, with these cases that don't fit in any one paradigm, but, you know, they certainly cross over. And as I get older and as I study this stuff more and more, I tend to think that a good portion of it is spiritual, interdimensional, and in fact is what Jacques Vallée said, who was very knowledgeable, who was a scientist, and who was got involved with the Air Force in Project Blue Book. And you know, there were other occurrences that have happened. There's a famous cave. There's a famous picture that was in a monastery in Yugoslavia that you may have seen, Ruthanne. I don't know. It's been reprinted in several books. I have some unusual old UFO books. I have one called UFOs Behind the Iron Curtain. And there is a picture of it, and you can see a teardrop-shaped craft in the atmosphere with what clearly looks like some kind of human entity inside it, or at least some type of living entity with a head and everything, and the people are on the ground looking up on it. That's just one example. And we don't know, you know, what this was supposed to represent, whether the people actually saw something and, you know, they painted it and somebody painted it. And, you know, there's things that just, you know, stand out just as a final comment, and then you can come in and make your comments. There was a book out, Brad Steiger. I don't know if he's still around, but for many, many years, like for 30 years, he's been steadily churning out. You know him?
Yes,
he's pretty well known because for many, many, he's like John Keel, the guy who wrote the Mothman Prophecies, which is another case which I think has mystical, certainly mystical connotations. Brad Steiger wrote a book, one of his many. He used to churn out, you know, like several paperbacks a year on this type of subject. And there was some farmer out in the farmland out in France. He might have been a farmer or a country doctor. I forget the specifics, but he had an interaction. He saw a UFO near his farm, and after the interaction, his whole psychology changed. He seemed to be in much of the time after he came into contact with the UFO, he seemed to be in some sort of quasi-mystical state. And he had a new acceptance of life. He was very calm. Now, the effects of UFOs on human beings is another area which has been studied both from a medical standpoint and a spiritual standpoint. And there have been other cases of people healed by UFOs, and so I'll stop at this point and let you comment. You know, give me some feedback on what what I've said.
I'd like to go back to Fatima, and for me, that it could go either way. They could have seen something. I don't doubt that the children saw and heard something, but as far as the sun standing still, that could also just be mass hysteria because they had heard that it was going to. I tend to be skeptical about that kind of thing, I guess.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And I hate it when people put themselves down. I'm not saying those people, and that was a long time ago and all this, but, you know, now we get reports from people, and most of them are very credible, but it's
right.
Those that aren't, that give everybody then the bad name, you know, the whole rotten apple thing, and
right.
It just makes me cringe. But you were talking about the first in England, and I had read, I didn't read the book, but I read the story and a couple other things, and That was, it was one of the biggies. You're right. maybe, now for me it wasn't like Roswell, because for me Roswell was just like, oh yeah, this, you know, you hear the son, who was a little boy at the time, and he talks about his father bringing in this material that he wasn't supposed to have, and, you know, showing them and these things. So, and there again, then the people around Roswell now have made it into a tourist attraction. And so, you know, it's like, sure, I'd like to go there, but I doubt that I would see anything, you know, I mean, maybe out. And like we were talking before about the southwest part of this country, of the United States, it's a very good location to see because we don't have major cities down there. You can really see the skies. So daytime or night, the chances of you seeing something are much greater. And we know that some people have actually located there for that express purpose. But I think there's a lot of... I don't see that it would be exclusive. What you're talking about, interdimensional craft and beings, and just people from other universes. I mean, because I think that space is filled with, and when we're talking dimensions and, you know, we're living parallel lives, I mean, space is, it's got to be so filled with so many different kinds of beings from so many places, and I find it just fascinating because the variety, and you know, here you'll hear people talk about the grays, and you know, a couple other, there's like, well, there's only maybe three or four types of beings that are visiting us right now, and I totally disagree with that. They may be the most obvious, but you know, what would you say? A lot of people say they have guardian angels. Other people have spirit guides. You know, go ahead.
I was going to say that's one area that I haven't delved too deeply in terms of these different types of entities that they say that's been identified. I know there are gray, they say there's gray entities and other things. And I don't know what to say about that because that's one aspect that hasn't been covered all that much in the books that I've reviewed over the years. You know, now there have been sightings, and usually the entities seen are humanoid of some type.
Yeah,
and that just, that may simply be the way that they appear to us, or the
exactly.
way they project, the way they project themselves towards us, because either they don't want to frighten us, or they feel if they did it any other way, we might not even recognize what they are.
Exactly. So yeah, this does not mean that in their own location that they look this way, but I think, I mean, both of those reasons that you gave, that could totally, they both could be true. They wouldn't want to frighten us, they wouldn't want us, you know, to panic, and that might mean that there's many more amongst us than we realize, or it could just be, yeah, they look so different, we wouldn't really recognize them as other beings. And maybe they're totally, they put on a physical body because they don't have one. There's all kinds of...
Well, that gets us into both angelic and demonic presences, which I believe do exist, and I believe they may operate exactly as you are describing it, because my research tells me that we have spiritual bodies composed of subatomic particles, and in a web of information and cosmic energy, and you know, it could very well be that certain of spiritual bodies are able to sort of bring their dimensional vibrations down and can contract down enough to be seen or to communicate in that way or to appear in that way. So I think that And we mustn't forget about the demonic entities, because one of the most famous recent, which for many years was a story that was kind of a footnote story. It wasn't a big story that everybody knew about. But the book that was published called Mothman Prophecies by John Keel, and I read the book, and a movie which was not all that bad was made in 2002. I think it had Richard Gere in it, yeah. Describes a demonic entity which had appeared right before the collapse of a bridge that spanned the Ohio River between one state and another, or I forget the exact location. It was kind of like, it was middle America, but it was neither here nor there. And it was based supposedly, and John Keel was a pretty good investigator, based on actual accounts, observances. We do know that the bridge collapsed. It was on a Christmas Eve, and there was a lot of traffic, a broken traffic light. There's a mechanical explanation for it, but the fact is that these Mothman entities apparently had been seen before major catastrophes in the past. Now, what do I mean by Mothman entities? Huge flying bird-like objects. The only way I could describe it is the body of a human, but more hawk-like, with wings and so on, and, you know, burning red eyes, and there have been various descriptions of the thing. And in the book and also in the movie, it shows that before this guy, who was a journalist, and I think that, you know, some of it was fictionalized, because I think Keel, the guy that was a journalist, I think might have been Keel, but before his wife died, he and the wife had seen it, or maybe he got this from somebody in the area, and then, you know, there were various mysterious occurrences occurring around that town near the bridge in the weeks before the bridge collapsed. Now, somehow he came up with this book that was published by somebody else who had seen these entities, and also these entities had kind of thought-transmissioned prophetic information to this guy. And he was predicting, the guy was originally a physicist from Cornell, he was predicting it would tell him that something was going to happen. In other words, it would tell him that a building was going to collapse, or it would tell him that something else was going to happen. And he started, you know, when the first time it happened, he didn't say anything to anybody because he thought it was, you know, maybe, you know, it came out of a dream, a nightmare, or something else. But mm-hmm. actually, what was predicted did happen. And after a period of time, he realized that these predictions were actually real, and whoever was or whatever was transmitting it to him, you know, was telling him something that was real. And then he went to the authorities and he tried to explain to them, look, you got to do X, Y, and Z because, you know, I was told that, you know, at this date, time, and location, this is going to happen or that's going to happen, and, you know, whatever it is, it could be very destructive. A plane will crash or something else will happen. Well, then the police got very suspicious. How did he know all this stuff? And he ended up in a psychiatric hospital, and it's a whole long story. But anyway, the investigator, who in the movie is portrayed as a journalist, this guy wrote a whole book about the whole thing, and he goes to meet him in Chicago. He's now kind of semi-retired, and he teaches high school or something that he doesn't. He finally found a way to get away from these things, and, you know, because he said, you know, terrible things happened to him, besides being, declared insane for a period of time. You know, he lost his family, and, nobody wanted it. People thought he was crazy. So after Kiehl's or whoever this was, the investigator, started talking to him, because he had read his book, he did publish a book on it, he said, listen, this is what's happening down in this area in Ohio, and, I see that you've had similar experiences, and, we're getting, local residents have seen these Mothmen beings in the atmosphere in different places, and now we find out that, there are predictions that, something terrible is going to happen along the river, and, what should we make of it? And the guy said, look, how did you get down there? He says, I don't know, something told me, to go to that area. And he says, well, who? He says, whatever told you to go over here to this area told you to go there because it wants to kill you. He says, go away from there. Something terrible is going to happen. This is all true, apparently. And this was before the bridge collapsed. Now, something else having that kind of validates this in a way is an experience that was told to me by a friend in California. And this friend went to graduate school in psychology there, and I met him here in New York, and he moved out there. At any rate, I visited him once on a trip after he had relocated, and he said that when he was in college out there or graduate school, I forget where, in Southern California, he and his friend were on some type of psychedelic substance. Now, I don't know what they had taken. This was years before. And he said they were sitting on the beach at night looking at the atmosphere over the ocean, and he saw these Mothman-like entities flying off the ocean for some period of time. And I don't know. Now, you can take this for what it's worth, maybe the chemicals opened up his doors of perception, as Aldous Huxley said in his famous work, The Doors of Perception. But I found it very interesting. And he knew nothing about the Mothman prophecies, incidentally. I don't think he knew anything about it, and we never discussed it, and I'm saying to myself, gee, this sounds very familiar to what appeared in the book and the movie. And so who knows,
Well, now you were talking about the, like the body of a human, but the wings and things of a bird. And, several of the native tribes have had in areas where they've been, and that would be here in the Midwest, along rock walls and things, these huge carvings, and they call them thunderbirds. And that sounds like what you're talking about. But, I mean, this was, in the past. And so you're talking about them currently. I don't think I've ever read that about the Ohio, the bridge that would be separating Ohio from Kentucky or Tennessee or something. I guess it'd be Tennessee. I don't know. But when you're talking about back in Yugoslavia, the teardrop with a being in it, I don't know where it is, but I've seen the pictures from caves from way, 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 way back. And I'm sure you've seen them. It looks like astronauts. These much stick figures with the bubble thing around the head and all. I mean, it looks like astronauts. And because I have no doubt in my own mind that we were engineered by beings from elsewhere. And then, so why wouldn't we at some part in our history make some drawings of them? And to some people, these were like gods. In the Old Testament, they talk about the mighty men the giants and all this.
Right.
Well, you know, that wasn't just out of somebody's imagination. These different beings have existed, and that's why I say there's so many different kinds for us
right.
to, you know, think that there's only a couple. And spirits, the angels, okay, guardian angels, spirit guides, all of these, they're real. Now, people could say, well, you know, they're a figment of your imagination and whatever, but I don't, I know some people that say that their guides are, or maybe their departed grandfather or something, you know, I mean, somebody that they actually knew.
Right, right.
And that's not my case. Although I talk to my brother person, my lover, my parents, and they're all in another dimension now. But
right.
I have somebody who actually found me in the place I used to live. And when I moved from there, the spirit came along. And,
wow.
you know, it's, you know, people could tell him. We actually found his name also. And he died back in almost 100 years ago when you were talking about the First World War. There was
right.
a big influenza epidemic in the United States.
Yes, yeah, there was. Yeah.
Yes. And the place I lived was one of the places where they would unload these poor people off of trains and put them
right.
in big warehouse kind of places. And he died there. And so I don't know. I mean, all that time, if he just hung around or if he went elsewhere, I've never asked him. And then came back and decided that I needed somebody. So.
Well, I mean, how did you first see him?
I haven't seen him. I've only felt him.
Oh, I see.
And he, a couple of friends and I, which I don't do, I've played with the Ouija board about 3 times in my life. I mean, play is it. But one
right.
of the guys wanted to do this Ouija board this one night. So another guy and I, we said, okay, let's do it. And they said, well,
right.
you know, let's see what your spirit, let's see if we can find his name. Because everybody could
right.
see him. They knew he was there for me. And it spelled out his name, which I'm not going to give over the air. But it was sort of an old-fashioned name, which, you know, and I couldn't really find, they didn't keep very good records at the location
right.
I'm talking about when these people were just pretty much shipped in to die. And so I don't know if he's never told me if he was a service person, but I think he was, but he had died
well,
in
I
that
mean, if he was in the Army, you could track it down. Now, if he was a civilian, that would be a lot harder.
Yeah, I
believe that the Army has a record of everybody who's ever in the Army drafted. I'm not saying it would be easy, but at least, you know, you'd have a better chance than somebody who was not, because then, you know.
Right, well, at least then I would know for sure if he was in the Army or some kind of military or
right.
a civilian, because both kinds were dying there. But, you know, and I have a couple other guys that have been with me probably, well, I don't know, I was going to say 20, 25 years maybe. So, I mean, I've always had the spirit guides around me. I've had some that
right, right.
were house guides, and sometime I'll tell you the story of that when I guess I was
right.
in danger and they left the house and came to me. But so I don't, and then I've worked with a lot of people also who, you know, we don't feel any qualms about talking about it because for us it's just a natural thing.
Right,
and
right.
sometimes when these spirits can manifest, and this is where you may get like a ghost or something coming, because it takes a lot of energy to put themselves in a form that we can see. And that's
right.
why more of them don't. But, you know, you can communicate. You don't have to,
yeah.
you know, see them in the 3D right in front of your face.
No, it's very possible. And I have some meditation tapes that I use. It is possible to do what is called projection of the astral body, in which you can actually project yourself interdimensionally and come in contact. You know, so it's not just them coming here. We could actually go there.
Oh, astral projection, sure. Yeah. I would just tell anybody who's going to do this, remember that there's a purpose behind it. Like, don't just do it as a parlor game.
There's a difference. There's a real difference.
Yes.
People who do this seriously, because for one thing, something that the quantum physicists have proven, that our subjective state will determine how and what we can come in contact with when it comes to psychic phenomena. Mm-hmm. You know, and they found, like, even people who've done testing, very academic and almost, you know, state psychologists have done testing, and they found that people were very resistant to the phenomena and disbelieved it before they had any evidence, were much harder to work with, and they didn't get good results for them. Whereas people who were at least would entertain the possibility and were open, they got much better results.
Yes.
You know, like, however it is, like, like showing a picture to somebody 5 miles away from the person who's supposed to say what the picture is, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what they call action at a distance, non-locality, which the quantum physicists have discovered, so there's a lot to what you say, as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, yes.
I think a lot to it.
Speaking of entities, have you ever taken part in seances, Steve?
No, I haven't, but I have been, I have gotten a reading from a medium. I did get a reading from a medium who was amazingly accurate. She really was. And, I have it on, a CD that she sent to me. It was like a phone reading. There's various, I feel that there are people who train themselves to travel interdimensionally and can reach those who have passed on, or passed out of this dimension. We call it birth and death, but I don't even like to use those terms. I call it an energy transformation.
That's what it is.
It is. Yeah. So, I mean, there are two nodal points in our lives here on Earth. One transformation produces what we call birth, and one transformation produces what we call death. But in actual fact, and we know this from physics and so on, it's just the transformation of energy. Nothing ever truly leaves the reality of the universe in one form or another. And we know, as I said, that we are only in this Earth reality and in this atomic reality, we are only perceiving approximately 6% of everything, of the being of the entire universe. So, in other words, those who feel so arrogant and walk around and say, well, if I can't, kick the tires and actually put my hand on something that doesn't exist, well, the fact of the matter is, you're only interacting with 60% of what exists. So, you shouldn't have any arrogance. I mean, that's where I say, it's not, that's a cause for humility or being humble, or at least being serious and not writing off anything that you can't immediately perceive. Because,
Or, just saying, oh, so-and-so is crazy because they say this or they believe this. It's like, well, they may not be as crazy as you think. And who are you anyway to judge? But, there's a lot more going on than we really...
Yeah. Now, one thing I wanted to hook on to before I forget about, you say that these interdimensional intelligences, they need energy to manifest. And this is something that paranormal investigators have found. And frequently... there are some times where there are presences and it gets extremely cold. The reason I believe that happens is because a lot of energy is being absorbed by whatever is appearing. But at the end of his life, Wilhelm Reich, the natural scientist, went out to Arizona, and he was doing weather experiments. He had a device that was able to create clouds and rain and or dissipate clouds by drawing the energy from it into pipes and into a well-like structure like water. And he saw UFOs out there, and he tried an experiment. And, of course, this is quite credible because, you know, that's out there is where Roswell happened in 46, and this was about 54. And when he trained the device on the UFO, he withdrew energy from the UFO, and the UFOs faded out. So although he didn't make this conclusion, I come to the conclusion it sounds like he withdrew the energy they were using to manifest. And when he withdrew the energy and grounded the energy, they disappeared from our perceptions.
Very possibly. Yeah.
Yeah, so I feel that there's an occult connection there. He felt that he was just disabling them. But when you read his accounts in Contact with Space, and I happen to have a copy of it, it's a very, very rare book. Only 1,000 were published because the FDA put him in prison for cancer experimentation. That's a whole different story. But right before he died, he commissioned one of his students to get 1,000 copies of this thing published. I have one. And, you know, it sounds to me very much like what you're talking about. They need the energy to manifest. And So to me, metaphysics, mysticism, UFOs, they all fit together. And it's very exciting and it's very expansive because here on Earth we live in what I call the box reality, you know. And it's so interesting. There's just one final point I want to make about this. C.J. Jung, the famous psychoanalyst, who was a student of Freud's and then created his own school of psychology, and I think he's pretty well known among most people now. He got older, and he's one of the psychoanalysts that are very well accepted among the mystical and metaphysical, because he was one that was not afraid to go into these areas. The others felt that they were, you know, they didn't want to be, you know, considered to be mystics or anything. But anyway, when he was older, much older, he lived into his 80s, but he had a heart attack and he nearly died. He had a near-death experience, and he saw the planet Earth from above. Now, of course, this is way before there was satellites or anything. I mean, this, you know, we're going back into the 30s or the 40s, yeah. I think, or the early 50s. But at any rate, there was no satellites, there was no space stations, there were no launches of any type, you know. And he looked down, he saw the waters, you know, the blue atmosphere, which now we have pictures of it, and it fits his description very well. The only thing is, he wasn't in a spaceship. It was his, what we would call soul or spiritual body, and he was up there, and he went into some sort of temple-like structure. He saw the doctor who was treating him in there too, and it occurred to him that probably that, you know, this means the doctor's not going to live too long either. Anyway. Wow. He was revived. I mean, you know, whatever the treatment was, he came back into Earth, and he was very unhappy about having to come back. He says, this isn't his exact words, but it's almost his exact words, and I know he used the words box reality. He said, damn it, now I'm back here in the reality of boxes, where I'm in like a box environment. I can't expand anymore. I'm like stuck here, you know. Now, interestingly enough, shortly after he recovered from this near-death experience, his doctor did die. This is all in his book. This is all in his autobiography, Memories, Dreams, and Reflections, which is readily obtainable. And I believe him. I have no reason to disbelieve him. So
right.
It was interesting to me that he described it as a box reality, because it's because our perceptions and our biological organisms and our dependencies on the earth and in the earth limit us so much.
Well,
we're
our own biggest hindrance. I mean, we put our own limitations. We know that there's corporations and governments and all that try to do that, but we don't have to let them. So I would
No. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that there may be times we can transcend it, rare times, but for the main, we do live in it. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, a lot of people haven't been taught how to remove themselves, just like astral projection. You know, it's not really all that hard to do, but some people have just come upon it inadvertently, but others learn because somebody just tells them. They explain.
Well, I mean, this has been in the last 200-300 years, there have been alchemists, occultists, and other philosophers who've written about this, and you can study it and learn how to do it. It's not very difficult. It's it can be done in a meditative state.
Mm-hmm.
And
like we're doing, it can be taught.
Yeah.
I mean, this government taught it to a lot of people during the Cold War because...
Well, they had that remote viewing program.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I mean, they taught it. You know, people, these abilities, I guess is the word, everybody has potential of, now some people will undoubtedly be better than others at it, but it's not that anybody has some special power that nobody else has.
No. I think it's a natural capacity that can be developed, although like you say, some people are better athletes than others. But certainly everybody can develop some athletic ability.
Well, that's, or maybe, you know, somebody's a great athlete, but they're not such a good cook. And
right.
I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be right in this very same field, but I mean, everybody has abilities. And when it comes to the psychic abilities, everybody has the abilities to, you know, something. And do several things, but just maybe not everything at the top level. But, you know, you can do a little bit of a lot of things, and then you have one or two areas you really stand out in. And I think that's one of the things that we need to be teaching youngsters. And a friend of mine, it was funny because she was very psychic, and her child, and, you know, he could, his great idea of his idea of a great time, he was 5 years old, was, you know, playing with the candle flame, making it, you know, enlarge, I mean, shoot up and then come back down and on and on. And, you know, we all had fun with him, but she told him, you know, not to do this around his playmates.
Right.
Because they wouldn't understand. And I think
that
this is one of those things that, you know, kids, it, unfortunately, and we're getting more to the point where you can be more open about it, but still, I mean, if you're teaching your kid these different things, you have to teach them to be discerning also. And
yeah, I mean, there's no question about it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think people who are extremely gifted in this have religions formed around them frequently. And, you know, I think for one, you know, a person like Jesus, let's say, had an extremely high ability in these areas and, you know, was very advanced in these areas. And I think, you know, and of course, a religion formed around it. And he's not the only one in history, you know, that have, I mean, without getting into any theological disputes, because people have various different beliefs. But the way I believe, you know, like people like Jesus, the Buddha, and others have a were born or came into this reality, this dimension, already with a very highly developed capacity for these things. And, you know,
well, one of the explanations for that could be that they've lived many lifetimes developing these skills.
Right,
so when
they
came back to the lifetime that we're aware of them in, they brought with them all this ability, whether they remembered it or not.
I happen to believe this, and also, and this will probably be pretty controversial, I also believe that David Koresh, who was wrongly victimized, was also a very gifted spiritual teacher. And the danger...
Go ahead.
I mean, that's my opinion, but the danger that these people have is that they draw the demonic towards them, and they're at risk. And you saw what happened to Koresh and the people around him. You saw what happened to Jesus and the people around him. And there's a whole history that goes back years, Giordano Bruno and many, many other people. And these people don't always appear the way we think they should appear. I mean, Koresh was he either was a high school dropout or he just graduated from high school. This is a man who memorized every word in the Bible. And
yeah,
he was extremely...
I have no problem. I don't know if I put him, you know, like in the same category as Jesus, but... I think he was I totally have him in a different category than I have Jim Jones, okay?
You're correct. I believe the
Jim
same.
Jones,
I think you're correct.
Jim Jones was a disaster. David Koresh was a fantastic man, fantastic leader, and this country didn't like that, those in power.
Well, I mean, he was destroyed. There was no reason. I don't want to get into all the specifics of what happened now. But it didn't have to happen that way.
Well,
and
I want
this
to say,
man,
if our listeners don't know, we're talking about David Koresh, who the whole compound was burned in Waco, Texas. When people talk about Waco, they're talking about David Koresh and his followers.
Yeah, he had an offshoot that he called the Branch Davidians.
Davidians,
which I think was an offshoot of the Seventh-day Adventists, if I have my my church history right.
Okay,
and he was clearly very gifted, and he was a legitimate guy. We're not talking about Jim Jones, who was a psychotic. We're talking about somebody who, and it didn't have to end that way, but, it would take too long to go into what happened to him in the specifics, but... If you're extremely gifted in these areas, there is a danger that you draw demonic presences. And we know that the devil tempted Jesus in the desert mountains. If he would abandon his spiritual mission, the devil offered him fantastic secular power on earth. I mean, like, you know, that he could govern, like, you know, 10 kingdoms at once or whatever was available back in those days. And, he rejected it. The demonic presences can be drawn to people with a very, very high degree of the ability to liberate other people. And I include Wilhelm Reich in this, because Wilhelm Reich, who wrote a book, The Murder of Christ, ended up being brought down by the U.S. government and the FDA and the drug companies. And he was put into prison, and he died in prison. And there's a long, long list of people. I mean, in the Middle Ages, people were burned. I mean, that's, you know, so, I mean, you know, but, I mean, this goes way, 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 way back to, you know, and I, again, that's why I always tell people, and I think it is known, that when you're in this area of investigation and research, you have to be careful. Not only in developing your own abilities and in investigating it and so on, you have to be careful of the deadly presences that can be drawn in and protect yourself from them, stay away from them, and know how to deal with them. Now, that's something that is well known to the old theologians, I mean, the Vatican was known about it for centuries.
One of these days, the different.
That'll
kinds
be
of
another topic. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, and I look forward to the next time, and we'll see what we can develop.
All right. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thanks, Ruth Ann. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye bye.
Bye.
The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Michael Gorman, you're on the air.
Hello, hello, how are you? I know Steve Katz, who had just called before. I missed time, you know, of it. You know, I thought it was at 6 for some reason. So I called a little late. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, fortunately.
Well, no. Oh. Hmm. Now, who... Nobody's late. Hello? Well, okay. I guess we're going to try this again. We'll play some music and see if we can get a Michael. Well, interesting. I guess Michael is not here. He hasn't called in. And I tried to call him, and I tried to call the other person who had called in, whose name I didn't catch. So I guess that's it for tonight. Next week, Five Rivers Radio Hour will return with Michael Gorman. So thank you, everyone. Good night.